mentioned earlier, I attended Houghton College, and while I was there, I lived with a bunch of guys for 2 years. And when you live with a bunch of guys for 2 years, a lot of stuff happens. Some stuff I'm not at liberty to say, because this is going out on the internet this morning. But a lot of stuff happens. There's a lot of history, a lot of ups and downs, a lot of laughing, a lot of life, and a lot of nicknames. My friend, Scott Lewandowski, we called Louie, or Luigi, or Ouija, or Weege, or Squeegee, or Squeege, just kind of kept morphing and changing the longer and further it went. I had a friend named Lee. His name was Poker, which then became Pokero, Poquito, Pocahontas, Pocolomoco, Pocosan, Pokino, and on and on and on. It just kind of went. I had a friend named Kevin. We called him Pinhead, not because he was dumb, but because he had spiked hair. So we called him Pinhead, or Pin, or Pincho, or Bronson Pincho, or Pinch, or Pinch Hitter, Pinny Chin Chin, Pin, Pinny, and so on. Names just continually morphing and changing the longer we were together. Not unlike the city of the church that we're going to look at this morning. Its name was constantly changing. And one of its names is actually going to look very familiar to you. We've been going through a sermon series where we've been looking at the seven churches of Revelation, and today we land on the sixth church. So far we've looked at Ephesus, Smyrna, Pergamum, Thyatira, and Sardis. And today we now look at the sixth of the seven cities, a city that goes by the name of Philadelphia. Now, obviously, this was not written to the church at Philadelphia in Pennsylvania, because that had yet to be established for 1,700 years. This is a church that was located in a city, just like the other seven churches in the region of Asia Minor. And the name of that city, Philadelphia, as you may know, means city of brotherly love. And that is the city from which our city in Pennsylvania gets its name, from the Greek word philadelphos, which literally just means one who loves his brother. Attalus II founded that city, and the reason why it was called that is because he just had this genuine and unique love and affection for his real-life brother. But soon after, the city's name got changed. There was an earthquake, and it completely demolished the city. There was nothing left, so they rebuilt it with the help of the Roman Caesar by the name of Tiberius. So they renamed the city, Neo Caesarea, the new city of Caesar, to honor him and thank him for all that he did and the grace and mercy he showed by withholding taxes and enable them to be able to rebuild that city. Then later, when the Caesar changed to Flavius, they changed their name again to the city of Flavia to honor that Roman Caesar. Smart group, right? They want the Caesars on their side. So, hey, we're going to name our city Flavia. Then after his reign, they changed it back to Philadelphia. With name comes identity. And with name change comes this constant changing of identity for this city. On top of that, the people of Philadelphia, or Neo Caesarea, or Flavia, depending on what name you want to go with and what era you're talking about, they lived in constant fear that there would be another earthquake in the city. The aftershocks happened for quite a while afterward. And any time a tremor would hit, they'd begin to panic, because they saw the destruction that happened the first time. There was real fear. In fact, many people of the city of Philadelphia actually lived outside of the city in huts, because they were afraid if another earthquake hit that the rubble would come down, the buildings would come down, and they would get injured or worse, killed. So they would leave the city and go into these hut structures that wouldn't kill them should they fall down. The people of Philadelphia lived in fear. And it's this Philadelphia that houses a church that Jesus writes a letter to in Revelation 3, starting at verse 7. And it reads like this: "To the angel of the church in Philadelphia, write, these are the words of him who is holy and true, who holds the key of David. What he opens, no one can shut. And what he shuts, no one can open." Now we're going to see as we go through this letter, this by far of the seven letters is the most complicated. Just because it's a little vague at points. We're not quite sure exactly what is being said and why it's being said. But boy, it starts out pretty clear right here, doesn't it? These are the words of him who is holy and true. Again, each letter starts with Jesus giving a particular description of himself, a perspective of himself that will help that particular group of believers. And here he says, I'm the one who's holy and true. I'm holy. I'm set apart, altogether different, perfect, pure, sinless, deity, God. I can do no wrong. And true. He's not just holy, but he's true. And he doesn't just tell the truth. He is the truth. In his very nature, he's the truth. In other words, he is the genuine article. He is real as opposed to unreal. He's authentic as opposed to fake. He's legitimate. He's true, as in he's faithful. He will always be true to his word. He does not fail. So Jesus says, I am the one who is holy, perfect, can do no wrong, and true, can never fail, is authentic and genuine and real, and he holds the keys. And he says, if I open it, ain't nobody going to shut it. And if I shut it, nobody's going to open it. In other words, he's in charge. He has the authority. He's in control of what comes and goes. And no one can interfere with that. Now, exactly what he opens and what he shuts isn't specifically said here, but there's a couple of things that we want you to think about. Number one, when Jesus says these words, he's actually quoting the prophet Isaiah in Isaiah 22:22. When Isaiah says these words, I will place on his shoulders the key to the house of David. What he opens, no one can shut. And what he shuts, no one can open. And in the original context here, Isaiah is talking about Eliakim. And Eliakim had the authority in that moment to decide who would come in the kingdom and who could not come into the kingdom. He was the one who decided who came in and out of the kingdom. It was upon his shoulders that that authority laid. And Jesus says that that key to the house of David now belongs to me. The keys to the heavenly Jerusalem, the new Jerusalem, the spiritual house of David. And Jesus says, I have the power and the authority to determine who is and who is not coming in and out of that kingdom. Secondly, it's important for us to remember that Jesus can open any door at any time for anybody. And apparently he's opened a door for these particular believers in Philadelphia, because this is what it says next in verse 8. I know your deeds. See, I have placed before you an open door that no one can shut. I know that you have little strength, yet you've kept my word and have not denied my name. I have opened a door that nobody can shut, because if I've opened it, ain't nobody gonna shut it. But what door? What door did Jesus open for them? It's a little unclear. He might be referring to the door of heaven itself. Maybe he's referring to an opportunity of a door that he's opened for them, and maybe it's referring to both. Because another interesting thing about this particular city was that it was originally founded to spread the Greek culture. That was the whole purpose in its being. It's called Hellenism, this idea of trying to spread Greek culture and Greek language to all the surrounding regions. It became like a missionary center for Greek thinking. And the thinking was that it was perfectly positioned and perfectly purposed to spread the news of Rome and Greece, depending on which era you're in. That it was meant to spread that culture, that Greek culture, that Greek language to everyone. And to the surrounding regions. And in the same way that this place was firmly established and purposed to spread this Greek thinking, Jesus might very now well be saying, you are uniquely positioned and purposed to spread the gospel to the surrounding regions. You are perfectly positioned for this mission. And he can entrust this mission to them because they have already proven that they are faithful. He says, you've kept my word. You have not denied my name. And look at what Jesus says here. He says, I know your deeds. We've seen this many times in the letters, that Jesus not just knows the deeds, but he knows the heart. And he looks at this church and he says, I know your deeds. I know that you've been faithful. I know that you have not denied my name. He knows the heart. He says, you've kept your word, my word. You haven't denied me. So now I've placed before you another opportunity. I've opened up a door, one that no one can shut because I've opened it. I know you're weary. I know you're tired. I know you have little strength. But don't worry, because I'm the one holding the door open. And again, he might also be referring at this moment to the door of heaven, right? I know you're tired. I know you're weary. But take heart. I've opened that door for you. And I will not shut it. It will not be shut. So stay faithful. Or maybe he's referring to a missionary opportunity, or maybe both, because both are great rewards for faithful living. He goes on to say this in verse 9. I will make those who are of the synagogue of Satan. Remember this? Got to go all the way back to the second church we looked at, the church at Smyrna, where we talked about the synagogue of Satan. I will make those who are of the synagogue of Satan, who claim to be Jews, though they are not, but are liars, I will make them come and fall down at your feet and acknowledge that I have loved you. This goes back to that synagogue in Smyrna. Remember the people we talked about that were Jewish? Maybe they were Jewish ethnically. Maybe they were Jewish religiously, but they weren't true Jews spiritually. And they were spreading lies about the believing Jews who had become Christians, and they were spreading poor teaching and going around and doing false teaching and spreading lies about the Jewish believers, and on top of that, then excluding them from participating in synagogue worship. Maybe Jesus is saying here, I'll open that door too. Like, you are part of my family. I alone have those keys. If I open it, nobody shuts it. I'll let you back in. You're a part of my family. And those Jews who are lying, those Jews of the synagogue of Satan who are spreading these false lies, and spreading these false teachings, he says, they will come to know the truth too. They will come to know that indeed I loved you. Yes, they're lying about you. Yes, they're mistreating you. Yes, they're excluding you. But in the end, the truth is going to be revealed. So because of that, because he's opened this door, he knows they're tired, he's encouraging them to walk anyway. So you've been faithful, you've been true, you've kept my word, you haven't denied me. In the end, the truth will be revealed. Though you've been excluded, though you've been mistreated, though you've been lied about, he goes on to say this in the next two verses. Since you have kept my commands to patiently endure, I will also keep you from the hour of trial that is going to come on the whole world to test the inhabitants of the earth. I am coming soon. Hold on to what you have so that no one takes your crown. Because they endured patiently, Jesus says, because you've kept my word, I will keep you. He reminds him, I'm coming back. So hold on. Hold on to what you have. Hold on a little longer. And he's reminding them to hold on to what they have so they don't lose the crown that is before them. It goes back to Smyrna again. Synagogue of Satan. Remember the three crowns we looked at? The crown of life. The crown of victory that Jesus promises for those who endure. Jesus is now reminding the people of Philadelphia, hold on to what you have. Patiently endure, for before you is a great crown. Don't let go of what you've got, and in the process, lose that crown. And then here comes for me the most powerful part of this letter, and honestly, I think the most powerful part of all of the letters, the rewards. But before we get to that, notice something about this church. There's no correction. Last week we looked at a church where there was no good news. This time we look at a church where Jesus has no correction for this church, just encouragement. He says, I know your deeds. I know you have little strength. I'm holding the door open. And if I open it, no one's going to shut it. You've kept my word. I will keep you. You have not denied my name. I will not deny yours. You are patiently enduring. Hold on. Just a little longer. Because I'm coming soon. But what will happen if they do that? What happens if they continue to keep his word? What happens if they patiently endure? What happens if they remain faithful to the end? Powerful words starting at the beginning of verse 12. The one who is victorious, I will make a pillar in the temple of my God. Never again will they leave it. To a bunch of people who have been excluded from worshiping in the synagogue, Jesus says, I will make you a pillar in the temple of God. That's powerful. Think about a pillar. Permanence, stability, strength. Like you who have been excluded, you who have been on the outside, no, you are going to be a pillar in the temple of God. And to a bunch of people who lived in fear constantly of an earthquake and what it might do to its building, Jesus says, no, no, no. You will be firmly planted, stable, secure, strong. You won't have to keep running in and out of the city to be safe. You won't have to leave it. You will be kept permanently. No fear. Stability. The earth will no longer move under your feet. The building won't fall down. You will be firmly established like a pillar. This heavenly temple, and you, a pillar in that temple, will be unshakable. There is going to be a day when all of the chaos around us is going to stop. It's going to end. Where everything around us will stop shaking. And we won't be shaking either. So Jesus says to these people, hold on. You who have been left out of the synagogue will become a pillar in my Father's house. And then Jesus says these amazing words. I will write on them. I will write on the pillars. I will write on them the name of my God. And the name of the city of my God, the new Jerusalem, to whom I hold the keys, which is coming down out of heaven from my God, and I will also write on them my new name. Jesus says he's going to write on the pillars. He's going to write on those who are victorious. He's going to write three things. He's going to write the name of God, the name of the city of God, and his own new name. Let me ask you something. Why do you write your name on something? Because it's yours. Because you want people to know to whom it belongs. You want people to understand whose it is. You proclaim who it belongs to. It identifies the owner. Your mom did it all the time, right? She wrote your name on the inside tag of your shirt. She wrote it on your lunchbox. She wrote it on your sneakers. She wrote it on your baseball glove, on your backpack. Like, she would write your name on anything that had any value because we wanted people to know who it belonged to, whose it was. And Jesus says he is going to take the name of those who are victorious. He's going to take those who are victorious, and he's going to plant them in the temple of God. And he's not just going to write the name of the city of God on them, and he's not just going to write the name of God on them. He's going to write his new name on them because they are his. They belong to the city of God. This is property of the city of God. It's declaring whose they are. This pillar is now property of God's city, property of God, property of Jesus Christ, and that is written in permanent ink. Like, you can't wash that off, you can't scrape that off, you can't etch that away, you can't blot it out. It's permanent. To the ones who are victorious, Jesus says, I will write on them the name of God. I will write on them the name of the city of God, and I will write my new name on them. I have no idea what that new name is. It'd be foolish for us to sit here and try and figure out what exactly that new name is. But if anybody knew anything about getting a new name, it was the city of Philadelphia, or Neo Caesarea, or Flavia. Their name changed many times, but Jesus having a new name? It's remarkable to think about. I mean, he will be so much more in that moment than anything anyone has ever experienced or imagined, that we're going to call him something different. And he says, and I'm going to etch that name on you and declare that you are mine. We, like the people in Philadelphia, will bear his name, his new name, if we keep his word, if we do not deny his name, and if we patiently endure being faithful to the end. Verse 13, whoever has ears, let them hear what the Spirit says to the churches. What is the Spirit saying to you this morning? See, what pleased Jesus about this particular church was that its members had persevered in the midst of numerous pressures to abandon God's word. And instead of denying his name, they remained faithful to him, although they had very little strength. He says they'll become great pillars. But at the same time, they lived in a culture full of uncertainty. When's the next earthquake gonna hit? When is the persecution gonna intensify? Right? They had no way of knowing. And it would have been very easy for those believers to get their eyes focused on all the wrong things. We live in a time of tremendous uncertainty too. But we need not fear, because he is holy and he is true, and he holds the keys. And whatever he opens, ain't nobody gonna shut. And whatever he shuts, ain't nobody gonna open. He can open any door at any time for anybody. He says, I know you're tired, but endure patiently, for there is a crown of life awaiting you. Whoever has ears, let him hear. Let's pray.